Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. My name is Amy Wheeler, and I am happy to spend this time with you. This is one of my favorite parts of the week. Usually, I have some interesting guest that really inspires me and makes me feel alive and passionate about the work that I'm doing. And today I decided to do a solo episode. It's hard for me to do a solo episode because it's much easier to play off another person, but I get these lovely emails from all of you telling me that you love the solo episode. So I'm just going to go ahead and go for it. And I hope you enjoy it. And thanks for giving me that lovely feedback. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We're so happy that you're on this journey with us, and we'd like to invite you to a few other activities. Number one, we have a Monday night yoga therapy clinic, and each month we choose a different topic. It's a deep time together, both professionally and personally, and we do offer CE units. So come join us on Monday nights if you will. We'll see you there, and until then, let's get into our podcast. So, what's been on my mind? I always like to bring to light the things that I'm thinking about, that I've been meditating on, that have been kind of having a little tapas or a little heat. And, one of the things my student actually brought it forward in our chai and chat today. It's so funny because I was already planning on talking about this. And I love it when there's these little synchronicities that happen in life when you're planning to do something and then someone else out of the blue just brings it up and you're like, "Woo, okay." So I'm listening. And that is this idea that in yoga, we kind of need an outside reference point to see ourselves clearly. And, I'll talk more about Yoga Sutra, chapter one, verse seven in a little bit, but let's just start with kind of a broad view of this topic. I think a lot of people, when they hear that, I need an outside reference point to see myself clearly, there's a lot of resistance that comes up. And I will say there's a lot of resistance for me that comes up as someone who likes to be autonomous, someone who feels like I do spend a lot of time getting to know myself deeply. The resistance that comes up in me is this thought of how could anyone possibly know my history? How could they know my story? How could they know my nervous system? How could they see me better than I see myself? I have lived with myself for 54 years. And, the idea that I have to answer to somebody or I have to do what they tell me to do is just not in the fiber of my being. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate because there is a part of me that understands that I don't see myself clearly, that I don't see my own blind spots, and that while I have wonderful friends, honest friends, authentic friends, and my family is honest to a degree that kind of makes me mad sometimes, I have those things in my life. I have those feedback loops. I do think that they offer some degree of letting us see our blind spots. And I'll give you a couple of examples. Pretty much every time I see one of my parents, whatever he thinks comes out of his mouth. And it is said to me very directly, such as, "Amy, you need to go get your A1C checked." Now that you can imagine what he's thinking when he's saying that, right? So, on one hand, I don't like that. I think that's rude. I don't think it's your business. This is my body. I'm handling it. On the other hand, I kind of appreciate someone that loves me enough to be honest with me and tell me what they think, even if I don't agree with it. I mean, I think that's one of the main points about what we're talking about today is just because a mentor or a family member or a friend says something really honest to us that may even be hurtful doesn't mean we have to agree with it. What I'm starting to understand is that the point of having this external reference point in our lives is that we get to take that information and decide for ourselves what makes sense, what doesn't, what we want to believe, what we don't want to believe. We can also put boundaries in place. We can say, hey, I really don't want you to talk about my health or my weight or how I look. It's not that we can't return the favor right back to them like a tennis game. We can volley back and forth. But I will say that I do appreciate people who love me enough to be honest with me and tell me how I'm, showing up, what their perception is, whether it's accurate or not is a different story. But to be an honest relationship is really a gift. I have a couple of good friends that I feel the same. Like we say some hard things to each other that nobody else cares enough to say to one another. And in fact, there have been friendships that have ended over not an honesty that was meant to be mean, but when there's a lot of care and you've known someone for a decade or two, and you see a huge change in, say, their personality. Like, I think as their friend, it's okay to say, I'm seeing a huge change in you. I don't understand it. I want to know more. I'm mirroring back to you or being an outside reference point. I think if we say it in a way that shows that we care, I think having that outside reference point is okay. And here's what I'm learning as an adult woman who's lost several friendships working through this with people. If I've said it in a way that actually is kind out of the caring of my heart, and if they decide to leave the relationship, that's on them. That tells me that the relationship was never as strong as I thought it was. Or maybe, we didn't have an honest friendship. So it's okay when people need to exit. And it could also be that they have to exit to survive. That if they admit XYZ to themselves, a lot of change would have to happen. Beliefs would have to be restructured. Values would have to be looked at. Personal decisions would have to be accounted for. Responsibility would need to be taken. So sometimes when we lose a family member or a friend because we've taken the role of their outside reference point, it's okay if we don't stay friends with everybody all the time forever or stay in deep connection with everybody. That said, I think most of us could really work on our delivery. And, maybe we could even start off with, hey, I've got something that I'd like to share with you. It might be challenging for you to hear this. I want to make sure that I'm doing it at the right time, and I want to get permission to share this with you. And they may say, right now is not a good time, or I don't want it in a text. I don't like to talk about serious matters in a text. They may say, actually, I don't want to hear your opinion. I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say, and I actually don't want to hear it. So thanks, but no thanks. It's all good. But if we can approach it in a way and give them the space and time and kind of let them know that we have something important to talk about, if they're open to it and we can do it in a non-judgmental way, I think that's a whole nother thing that we, many of us struggle with. But what if you just looked at it? Like, what would a video camera say about the situation without using a lot of words that have judgment? So instead of saying something like, well, I noticed that you're being very good lately. Could you say, I noticed that you are taking time to care for yourself? You're taking time to do self-care. I saw that you decided to go to the gym 3 mornings this week. That is a different phrase than you did good or you did bad or I like this or I don't like that or you're acting mean or you're not doing it right. Do you see the difference in the language? I always, when I have a hard message to give, I try to stick to the facts and say what the camera would see. And then if that goes okay, I could say, here's how that's making me feel, which is not your responsibility, but I do want you to know that these feelings are arising for me. Here's some of the needs that I have around you and our relationship. And I can get more, if they're open to hearing the observation, like the camera sees, and then I could ask permission to say, would you like to know how that's sitting with me, how I'm feeling, what are my needs? Again, let them say, yes, it's okay, or I have time to talk about this, or maybe no, I don't have the bandwidth and I really don't want to have this conversation. So just to say that we can't assume everyone wants us to be their outside reference point. And if they're being our outside reference point, we have that same permission too, to basically say, okay, stop that sentence. I didn't ask for your opinion. I actually don't have time to deal with that right now. I'm feeling a little annoyed because as I'm walking up the stairs to a task that needs to get done, you're bringing up a very serious topic about my health, and it's an inappropriate time. And, you know, maybe there's a time we can discuss this, but now is not it. The way that you just said that as I was walking across the room didn't feel good. And actually, I'd like you to keep your opinion to yourself. Or, wow, thanks for mentioning that to me. I'd have time right after this meeting to sit down and have a discussion with you and let you know where I'm at about that. So, you know, I think we take our friends and our family members for granted. We don't treat them like we might a colleague or something, but it's communication matters and the way we do it matters.
Hello, are you interested in polyvagal theory? Well, if so, I have two really cool things you might be interested in. One is an app called the Mighty Network, where Marlisa Sullivan and myself are hosting a yoga therapy and polyvagal theory group, and it's free. You can just join the group, come in and share thoughts and ideas on polyvagal theory, yoga, and yoga therapy. We try to post every week, stimulating a community around yoga, the nervous system, and polyvagal theory. So we'd love to have you join us. In addition, we are giving a 7-week class on polyvagal theory and yoga starting in the fall. You can find that on www.polyvagalinstitute.org, O-R-G. So we'd love to invite you to that 7-week course that's starting in September of 2024.
Now, with all of that said, if both parties are willing and open to be in this kind of honest, authentic way where we can really talk and mirror to each other because we've given each other permission to do that in the relationship, that can be a beautiful thing. I just had a talk with a friend the other day. And I said, look, you know, when I need to say something really hard to you, how would you like me to approach you? How would that conversation go? How would you like to receive that? They said, I'm not sure. I hadn't thought about that. I said, well, okay, let's role play. If I had something hard to say and I came and said this to you, do you think we could find a solution together? And of course, my friend said, yes, I definitely think we could if you did it in that way. I said, okay. So next time that happens, next time I am feeling this way, I'm actually going to come to you and tell you. And then remember that we promised we wouldn't abandon each other, that we would work through it together. Oh, she said, perfect, let's try it. So there's ways to kind of set the stage for healthy communication and healthy relationship. And right about now, you're probably thinking, well, geez, if I said that to my spouse or my kids or my partner or my friend, they would think I'm weird. They would say, why are you talking to me like this? Or they might say, I absolutely don't want to know your feelings and needs. I don't want to know your observations. That is information also. Their inability to want to connect in that way, or that was a judgment term, inability. I'd have to think about that if that's judgment or not, but you get the idea. You have to think through your language. But, you know, if they basically said, I don't have the time, energy, bandwidth, or desire to hear anything that you have to say, that's information. That's a decision that gets to be made then. And you get to decide how much time, energy, bandwidth you want to put into that relationship when they're unwilling to match you. And so, you know, along those lines, the few times that has happened where, you know, somebody just said, absolutely not, it's not in the cards for us. I know my needs in a relationship. I know my need for honesty, authenticity, I know my need for compassion and empathy. And if somebody flat out tells me they have no interest in any of that with me, I have some decisions to make. That is something that may be a non-negotiable for me, depending on the depth and intimacy of that relationship. Or they might say, I'd love to do that, but I have no idea how. Can you help me learn? Well, that's great. We love that answer. So, you know, these conversations, I think the reasons we don't oftentimes have these conversations is because we don't know how it's going to turn out. We, number one, don't trust ourselves to have that observational camera, like non-judgmental, you know, description of what's happening. We don't check in with ourselves and figure out what we're feeling, because that's scary. What might that lead to? What doors might that open? I better shove this down and repress it so that nobody can see the real me and how I have feelings and needs. We don't spend time checking in with our needs and trying to figure out, wow, what needs are met and what needs are unmet. We don't do any of that. And we especially don't make requests, not demands. There's a difference between a demand and a request. And some of you are probably thinking right now, wow, this sounds a lot like Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication. It definitely is. It definitely is. I had a friend the other day say, Amy, when you do nonviolent communication, it's too subtle. I need you to hit me over the head with a baseball bat and use violent communication, which I thought was hilarious. But then I was given permission to be more direct, to be more blunt, and just say, hey, stop what you're doing. It doesn't feel good, right? And that's wonderful too. If somebody wants me to use my blunt force, I can do that too. But it's agreed upon, and the relationship will grow and shift and change, and we'll each have needs and come back and say, I need more of this and less of that. I'm thinking back to a time, one of the first times I went to India, I went with a friend I didn't know that well. We both wanted to go to India. We hadn't been friends for very long, but we negotiated our relationship quite well on that trip. And one of the things that she started doing, which I thought was hilarious at the time, and I still get a real chuckle out of it, she would give me a score from 1 to 10 on the content of my message to her, whatever I wanted to say to her. And then she'd give me a score on my delivery. And so let's just say I said to her, oh, I really want to go shopping this afternoon and go to lunch. I'm ready to go. Let's get out the door really fast. She might say, content? A 9. I would love to go shopping. I would love to go out for lunch. Delivery, a 3, assuming that I can just like jump up right now and get going out the door and not having any consideration for my time and my needs and my preparation for being gone all day. Like, no, that doesn't work for me. You just assumed that you could make the rules and get us out the door quickly. So to me, that was so helpful. Like she said, the content is good, but your delivery is pretty bad. So that's just an example. But just to say, all of this can be negotiated in relationships if we trust in the process and allow ourselves to, number one, not abandon ourselves to please another. That's huge. I could have a whole podcast on that one. But number two, trust that if we speak our truth and someone chooses to reject us, abandon us, leave us, it's okay, because that connection was probably not what you thought it was. Someone who's willing to just bolt and be done, they were not your friend. Or, you know, possibly they have something going on that they need to go take care of, and you can have compassion for that. But either way, it's going to be all right. You don't need to abandon yourself to please another. So getting back to the original point of what I wanted to talk about, which is this idea of outside reference points. And I started with the friends and the family and the colleagues and the Sangha, because I think that's a natural place to start. I think that we all have that in our lives. And, you know, there's pros and cons of that. They're close to us. They've seen us, you know, through all of our stages. They understand who we are, but they might also have some biases against us. They might look at habitual patterns and be like, oh no, not this again, right? So there's some things that might be helpful with family and friends and colleagues. And I also think there is room for having a mentor of some sort. And it doesn't have to be a lifelong mentor. It doesn't have to be a spiritual mentor. It doesn't have to be a guru. I personally feel there needs to be an outside reference point. Somebody that doesn't have high stakes in your life, that if you decide to reject them or abandon them when they're honest with you, that it actually is not a big deal for them. And therefore, they can call out the obvious things and have an honest relationship. Now, what's really weird about this is oftentimes we're paying someone to do that. And that, you know, gets a little bit sticky because they may want to keep you as a client. So I think one of the best ways, I have one mentor in my life that I'm not paying her. We talk a couple of times a month for about an hour. She's, you know, kind of a spiritual fairy godmother, and she just loves me and I love her. And we hash and bash it out, and she'll say hard things to me and I'll say things to her. And it's just a beautiful relationship. It's been agreed upon that she's mentoring me. It's not like we are friendly, but there's also this expectation that she is giving of her time and energy and life force, because as she moves into her later years of life, she wants to have had, I wouldn't call it a protege, but have someone that she's contributed to in this life as her mentee, someone she can pass her spiritual knowledge onto. So it's good for her and it's good for me. So that might be one option of an outside reference point. Another one might be a paid option. I have a teacher in India who obviously needs to make a living. This is her livelihood, and I meet with her once or twice a month, and I do pay her, but she is very direct with me. Like, I don't get the idea that the paycheck she's receiving from me is in any way influencing the messages she's giving me about how I look, how I'm coming across, how I'm communicating, how my mind is working. Like, she's very direct, and I have signed up for that. I want that outside reference point. Do I agree with every single thing she says? No, of course I don't agree with everything she says, but I do reflect on it. I do take the time to think about her perspective, what she's seeing, if there's any truth to it. Is it a partial truth? Is it a full truth? Is it not true? And act accordingly. And I think that's really the process that we're looking for, that tapas, to say, am I willing to be humble and open enough to even consider someone else's perspective? They don't need to micromanage me. They don't need to be my boss. They don't need to, you know, they're the guru and I'm the student. It's not like that. But there is an agreed upon mentorship that I'm willing to engage in so that I can see my blind spots, so that I'm not left wondering and confused why this thing has happened 14 times in my life and I don't understand why it keeps happening. I can bring that to the mentor and be like, look, this is a pattern that I'm seeing and I don't understand. And what do you think of this? I did that with my spiritual fairy godmother a couple of days ago, and she just had the most amazing external reference point, things that I could have never thought of in my whole life. I'm incapable of those kinds of thoughts that she said. And it really changed my perspective on something. And I was like, wow, interesting. So I don't know if you want me to share with you kind of a brief synopsis of this, just so you can get an idea of what it might be. But I had been beating myself up for getting into situations that had a little conflict in them, and that I was upset with myself for going into a state of freeze. One of the situations was that I was on a farm. Oh, I need to give a trigger warning for this one. It's still so upsetting to me, but there was an animal being harmed and the person basically told me to deal with it, that we're on a farm and this is what happens here. And I went into a freeze state and I started fawning. even though I did not agree that this animal should be suffering. But I started fawning, I guess, to survive. So I took this to my fairy godmother and I said, oh my gosh, when something like this is happening, I don't want to freeze and I don't want to fawn. How can I work on this? And she basically said, Amy, maybe you were being compassionate to all involved, to yourself, to the animal, to the person that owned the farm. She said, you know, on the farm, it's different. It was not your property. It was not your animal. It actually wasn't your business to, you know, step in and save this animal. And therefore, were you in freeze or were you basically taking right action and doing what was best for everyone involved, which was in that instance, you needed to keep the peace and keep your opinions to yourself because it's not your property. And now I'm not saying I 100% agree with her opinion. I'm still wrestling with it and struggling with it. And when I went back to the farm, I couldn't even look at that person. Like I felt repelled by that person that had done that. I considered not going to the farm anymore. I mean, I'm still in process with it, but she did give me something to think about that when it's someone else's farm, it's their animals, it's their property, it's their thing. Can I go in and demand that she do it my way? Right. And the answer, I don't know what the answer is. So this is the kind of outside reference point that I'm talking about, that it gives us food for thought to discover who we are, what we value. And, you know, now my choices with that farm are to say, I don't want to go there anymore because I don't agree with that treatment of animals, or to tell the farmer that, you know, that really didn't work for me to have that happen. I'm a client, a paying client, and it may be the way that you run the farm, but as your paying client, it's not something that sat well with me that you had me watch that. I'm not okay. And then let those chips fall. I mean, there's many different ways I could handle it. I could ignore it and just go about my business. But the idea is that through the outside reference point of getting another perspective than my own, I'm able to reflect on my deepest values and what I might need to do next in this situation. So anyway, I hope that example was not too upsetting. It's just something that's been really on my mind the last few weeks and an example of how getting someone else's perspective and kind of getting out of my own shoes and my own judgment and my own anger and sadness has been helpful. And it doesn't mean I agree with everything that my mentor said, but at least I'm not stuck in judgment and anger and sadness. I'm actually able to reflect and figure out what my next steps might be. Versus before I talked to her, I was in a funk. I could not stop thinking about it. I couldn't work through it. I couldn't be rational about it. I started calling the woman at the farm names. I won't tell you the name that I came up with for her, but it wasn't very nice. I was not in a good place. So now this brings us to Patanjali. Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, Sutra 1.7, Chapter 1, Verse 7. And basically what Patanjali is saying is that one day we will have correct perception. We will have pramana, which means my biases, my judgments, my values, my needs will not color everything. I won't think that it should be my way all the time or the highway. I will start to see many perspectives. I will start to see truth. I will start to see that there is a truth outside of my truth. And basically, I will be able to see reality very clearly instead of through the lens of the personality of Amy Wheeler. That is a process. And this process in Yoga Sutra 1.7 basically says that as you start to move towards clear perception, first, you do things to participate in self-study, specifically through the texts, the ancient spiritual texts. You're reading your text, you're looking at your lifestyle, you're, oh, here's a gap. Ooh, I shouldn't have acted that way. Oh my gosh, did I really do that? here in my text, it says we shouldn't be doing that. So that's kind of the first step, is this idea of self-reflection, self-analysis, when we compare our thoughts and words and actions to an authority or a text. And that could also be a mentor or someone giving you wise counsel, right? That I'm reflecting upon what my mentor said to me. So that's step one. Step two is when those things are really ingrained in us and we start to see things more clearly. We start to understand that there's a reality out there that's different than my reality, and create space for that, create space for other opinions, other viewpoints, still having boundaries within our lives and, you know, saying what we need, but basically not being so self-centered or self-identified. And at this point, as the clarity starts to come in, where it's not so self-referenced anymore, at this point, we can infer things. We can start to see patterns. We can start to understand, oh, last time this happened, it was likely to end up this way. Or, when this goes wrong, that usually follows. This kind of thing. You can infer what might happen, and then you can watch and see if your pattern recognition is on track. And I find this fascinating because they say people who are neurodivergent have excellent pattern recognition. They always see things coming before everybody else. They have less attachment to their own self-reference point of view oftentimes. And therefore, they're on the forefront of seeing the train coming down the track and inferring, oh, I heard the train coming. I heard the wheels, you know, on the tracks. There's going to be a train coming in 5 minutes. They're inferring that. And usually they're telling everybody else, hey, where there's smoke, there's fire. Watch out. Here it comes. Those people oftentimes get kind of thrown to the wolves, and people say, you know, we don't believe you. You're a troublemaker. You're a whistleblower. You're causing problems. You know, they get a bad rap, but the truth is they see the patterns and they have excellent inference skills, which is a more subtle level than talking to a wise counsel or looking at these ancient spiritual texts. It's a layer that's more subtle and more refined on the way to clear, direct perception, which is third stage that we're working towards. So when it comes to inference, I think we say, oh, I have intuition about this. Well, is your intuition really intuition, or is it pattern recognition? And I think we would all be wise to watch and see which one of our intuitions, aka pattern recognitions, actually comes to fruition in the way that we thought it would, and which ones don't. I love to do this. I love to be open-minded and be like, ooh, I think I understand what's going to happen, but I'm not attached to it because I want to see if my inference and my pattern recognition is true, or if it's still really colored with my biases and my agenda and my expectations. And I can say, you know, there's some days that I'm like, awesome, I knew that, I saw that. And then other days I'm like, oh gosh, Amy, you're a mess. You just projected all your stuff all over this. And no, there was no clarity there. There was no pattern recognition. There's no inference. There's no intuition. You're just a disaster. Stop it. But that's going to be a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 decades process where we kind of watch and see when we had clarity and when we don't. And one pattern that I do recognize is if I'm emotional, then that means I'm not clear. I have to, you know, digest the emotions and get to a quiet place, and then I'll have more clarity. And I think many of you probably recognize that in yourselves. Not to push down the emotions or suppress them, but rather to just recognize that that's probably not a great time to have conversations and to make decisions. All right, so this road is taking us back to total clarity, again, back to pramana, where you can have direct perception of reality, and your little reality actually matches up with the reality with a capital R, or the truth with a capital T, meaning more often than not, you see what's happening, you understand what's happening, you have enough detachment from your opinions and your desires and your expectations and your beliefs and your values. You have enough detachment to basically see what's happening as it is instead of how you want it to be. And I think it's so interesting coming into an election. I'm really working on this. Of course, I have my attachments and my desires about how this election will turn out. I have my judgments and I let myself go there. But then I also try to step out of my little bubble and recognize what is without all of my stuff on top of it. I look at the other candidate and I can see, oh, that's why this is appealing. That's why people are going for this. I don't like it. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. I understand the need for what they're perceiving as safety or, you know, family values or whatever those needs are. Like, I get it, how their candidate, how they think it's meeting their needs, just like I do that for my candidate. That kind of ability to back off and take the larger view. Again, it's not that I agree with it, but I can understand it. That's what we mean by we're moving closer towards pramana, where we're able to understand multiple perspectives, even if we don't agree with them, and see clearly so that if the other candidate should win, whichever side you're on, it doesn't matter, it won't be a surprise. You'll have contemplated this deeply and what is happening and why it's happening and how we got here. I don't know about you, but there's been a few elections that I woke up the next morning in shock because I had been in my bubble. I didn't see it coming. And so it's interesting to do your best to see reality for what it is and to try to take off your blinders and your tunnel vision. Again, you don't have to agree with whatever you're looking at, but to actually see it for what it is. And, you know, if I do that for this example of the animal being harmed on the farm, I can put myself in the farmer's shoes. I can see how many times a day this situation might happen to a small rodent. And I can understand that for the farmer, it would be very challenging to take care of that multiple times a day, and that that's not the priority, and they don't have the bandwidth for that, and they've got a lot going on that I don't even understand what it takes to run a farm. Like, I can understand that. Do I like it? No. Is it clear to me that probably farmers have a different view of animals than I do, especially small rodent type animals or bunnies or something? Yeah, we have very different perspectives. To me, that is a pet. You give it a name, you feed it carrots, you snuggle it, it may hop around your house. That is not the perception of someone else. And to have the clarity to understand that, and again, I don't like it, but I am starting to understand it, that why it is the way it is. So all of this is to say that when we are working towards clarity, towards reality with a capital R, towards truth with a capital T, that Patanjali has this very methodical way that first you have wise counsel and you read these spiritual texts, then you start to see pattern recognition and maybe have more inference and even some intuition. And then finally, you get total clarity. You start to understand the world as it is, not the world as you want it to be. And once you get there, you can still have preferences, but you can easily step off into, I'm going to look at this situation for what it is and have clarity about it. So all of that to say that some of us have not really loved the idea about an outside reference point. We feel it's controlling and it's manipulating. And how could this person possibly know me as well as I know myself? And I would love for you to consider having an outside reference point, because I think there's some really valuable things in there. And if we're not scared to listen to someone else's opinion, What harm is there? I mean, I did have a mentor once that did some really shady stuff, and I had to fire her. And that was okay too. That was like, yeah, I don't like that kind of shadiness, lady. I had gone to get a mentor in CODA. Some of you know what CODA is. And she was shady. And after, a couple of months, I was like, no, this is not my outside reference point. We are not doing this, right? But that didn't stop me from finding more mentors and different people that could mirror back to me and reflect my blind spots and help me see things differently. So I guess I leave you today with some ideas around outside reference points and if you would consider it and who that might be for you, and just being open to contemplating that there is some beautiful humility in admitting to ourselves we don't know it all. We probably don't know much at all. We're all, walking each other home, and having a mentor might be a good thing. So, all right. Thank you so much for listening. And, one of our programs coming up at Optimal State is the Optimal Yoga Nidra Facilitator course, where we teach you how to teach Yoga Nidra. And it's a 100-hour course. It starts in October of 2024, and it is a 6-month program, finishes in March of 2025. If you want more information, come to www.theoptimalstate.com, and we'll be happy to give you some information about that course. All right, everybody, have a wonderful day, and we'll talk soon. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour each week. We're building a community here, and we'd love to hear your ideas about how you would like to build more community with us. Feel free to email us at welcome@theoptimalstate.com and give us your ideas on ways that we could be of service to you and build more community. We'd love to hear from you. Again, welcome@theoptimalstate.com. All right, have a great day. We'll see you soon.
A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.